Welcome back to another episode of Diagnosing a Killer. I'm Kenna.
I'm Coel.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Do you think that when people skip episodes, it's just, hello, 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 over and over and over again?
Oh, like when they click through them?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
I like that.
I like that too. Hello to hello. Everyone. I think that we're pretty much just going to get right into this episode. I've been researching it for the better part of like 2 weeks. I'm ready to get it out there. It's a really well-known case and I'm excited about it. But before we begin, would you like to give everyone our handles?
Yes, there's a mosquito behind you.
Ew.
Oh, get up!
Oh, did I get it?
Did you get it?
No. Rats. I didn't get it.
You were really close, though. I think you might have winged it.
I said I couldn't have been two for two because today my coworker said, oh my god, there's a mosquito in here, and I look, and it's literally right in front of my face, and I killed it. I was like, oh my god.
That was a really good attempt, though.
Thanks.
You can check us out anywhere on social media at Diagnosing a Killer, other than X, formerly known as Twitter, which is at Killer Diagnosis. We also have a PayPal, Venmo, Cash App, and a Patreon.
All the things.
All the things. Our Patreon has 4 tiers. That first tier gets ad-free mental breakdown episodes, and tiers 2, 3, and 4 get all ad-free episodes, and tiers 3 and 4 get that added bonus episode once a month towards the end of the month. I'm excited to hear your next one.
Me too. I have a good one, but I think I'm going to keep this one a secret, because I also think that if I say who it is, no one will really know, because it's, like, super recent and, like, not very well known.
All right.
Yeah. So, that being said, are you ready to jump into this case?
Don't forget to see us at the True Crime Paranormal Podcast Festival July 12th. That is very, very rapidly approaching.
Yes.
If you do not have your tickets, I suggest you go ahead and you do that. And then see us there at Denver.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited because not only are we going to be in Denver having the grandest time, we're both fairly familiar with Denver, which is cool. It's like home away from home. But we're going to find out where we're going next year in like 3 weeks when we are there. We're going to announce it. Just putting it out there, I think it's going to be in Nashville. Where do you think it's going to be?
Vegas. It's got to be in Vegas.
Oh God, I would love to go back to Vegas.
Could you imagine? We already like stay up way too late and hang out with all the other casters and, you know, participants, the VIPs. Oh my gosh, we stay up so late. We hang out like all night long. Yeah. And then I can't even imagine in Vegas.
We wouldn't sleep.
There would be no sleeping.
And the casino has no windows, so it'd just be in there all night.
Never know what time it was.
Okay, I think we're going to get into this episode. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
So today we are going to be talking about one, Israel Keyes.
Israel Keyes?
Yeah.
Oh my god. I am so excited.
I knew you were gonna know the name, but like, he's literally been at the top of my list for months, and I'm just like, I don't know, because I never knew the story, and then I started reading it, and I was like, oh shit, I'm like, this guy's an anomaly.
He's a baddie, yeah.
He's wild.
Mm-hmm. Just a reminder to all of our listeners, Kenna and I have been doing this little experiment, and I think it's working out well, that we do not tell each other the content warning before we can reveal our episodes to each other. So essentially right now, I am not going to hear any of that warning at all. You as the listener will get that warning right about now.
Content warning. This episode contains depictions of child neglect and abuse, graphic animal abuse, brutal treatment of a deceased person, crimes against minors, and ultimately suicide. If this episode is not for you, we encourage you to find another one of our episodes. Remember, your mental health is very important, and we love you.
Love you.
Bye. Bye. Okay, let's get into this. Israel Keyes was born on January 7th, 1978, in Richmond, Utah, to parents John Jeffrey, or Jeff Keyes, and Heidi Hackinson Keyes. I think that's her maiden name.
Hmm.
So he doesn't have a middle name. I was like, oh, I forgot his middle name.
That's sad.
Doesn't have one.
Our grandpa didn't have a middle name. He had to have... he had to make up his own when he went into the war.
Oh, I didn't know that. Israel would be the second of 9 or 10 children that the couple would have. I saw conflicting sources.
Mm-hmm.
Among the names of his sisters, Autumn Rose, Hosanna, Sunshine, Charity and America.
Okay, I'm not going to make an inappropriate strip club joke right now.
Just some strong names there.
Next on the main stage, we got Charity. Yeah. Give her your tips, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh my god. They would sound just like that, too. It's like Carnival Barker.
Next on the main stage.
The Keys' parents were known as having very strong beliefs, and that led them to have all of their children at home, as they did not believe in medical assistance. Mm. Jeff and Heidi were also members of the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and they took their beliefs very seriously. This included homeschooling all of the children for many years, and not once taking any of them to see a doctor during their childhood. This also led to no birth certificates.
Really?
Yes.
In what year?
At least not for some of them. I'm not sure if all of them. 78 is when he was born.
So, yeah, they had birth certificates. They just didn't. They were just at home births and stuff. So, essentially, like, they didn't. There's no hospital records or essentially, like, birth certificates. Like, we had as a nation birth certificates.
Yes.
Just them, the family, didn't.
Correct.
Okay.
The children would be homeschooled until 1983. And when Israel was just 5 years old, Jeff and Heidi would take it upon themselves to leave the church and move the family to a remote plot of land north of Colville, Washington.
That's interesting.
So they became inactive.
Yeah, so I guess they left their church and then, I guess, isolated?
No, they were leaving, like, that church, but they would join another one elsewhere.
Okay.
Here, the family was living in a tent while Jeff began building a cabin that they would eventually inhabit.
Damn, that sounds like a sweet video game.
The first 7 years here, the family lived in the tent while Jeff built the cabin by himself, so it was going to take a long time.
It had one bedroom for
right.
all those
oh,
people.
Oh, no, it did. Jeff was known to be busy the majority of the time, and when he was not working on the cabin, he was praying for hours out in the woods behind the house. Well, behind the tent, I guess. Yeah.
Is there any, like...
It's a little cuckoo.
Yeah, just, yeah. Is there any history of mental illness on the parents?
Not that I saw. I don't think, here's the thing. I'm not saying that it's, like, bad to be really involved in your faith, right? But in this particular story, it's, like, dad is almost, like, using it to, like, not be around the family. Like, he's either in the woods praying all day or he's working on the cabin, but he's not, like, spending time, like, in the tent with the family.
Do you think that's another reason why they had so many children was for religious purposes and not necessarily because they wanted to have a lot of children?
Yeah, I do.
Hmm.
Due to Jeff's absence from the family, Israel, as the eldest son, began to take it upon himself to hunt and kill game in order to feed his family.
Fair.
Along with hunting, he taught himself how to dress and butcher the animal in order to make the most out of it. Around this time, when Israel was just 10 years old, he would begin showing concerning signs, such as breaking and entering, stealing, and setting fires. Meanwhile, after the cabin was built enough to be inhabited, the family would move in. However, it did not have running water or electricity, and there was only one room, so everyone was pretty much on top of each other.
Oh my gosh.
While the parents had the family leave the LDS church years prior, they did not leave their faith, like I said, and the family would begin attending services at another church called the Ark. The Ark was known around town as a place that preached to white supremacy ideology. It's just great. At the age of 12, Israel was noted as being very interested in the Ark, and was also known to be obsessed with guns, these being the main target of what he was trying to steal. Like, anywhere he broke in, he's, like, looking for guns.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after attending services at the church, the family would meet and become friends with a man by the name of Chivi Kehoe, who happened to be the neighbor of the Keyses as well. The family would later attend a different church in Colville that was called the Christian Israel Covenant Church. This church was known to preach that conceiving a child of mixed race was abominable and deviant, and that Anglo-Saxons were meant to rule over all other races.
I am not going to make it through this episode.
It's like, let's get away from those white supremacists and we'll go to this church. They're much better.
Screw those assholes. Let's go over here and hang out with these dickheads.
Yeah. With the cabin being very small in size, a number of children were forced to sleep in the tent outside to open up some room. And this is the time that Israel would begin bragging to other children at the church about how he once skinned a deer alive. Probably not. Like, 10.
Well, no.
So he was My point in saying the kids had to sleep outside is that he was spending a lot more time, like, in the woods hunting game. Yeah. But it turns out to not necessarily be, like, for food anymore. It's almost, like, for fun.
Yeah. It makes sense that the kids would spend a lot of time outside, because who wants to be in a smelly cabin with one room?
With no water.
With no water.
Or electricity. It's probably hot as fuck in there.
They're probably pooping.
Dry and hot.
It smells like poop in the corner.
Israel would also comment about how he would, quote, hunt anything with a heartbeat, end quote. And due to his odd choice of conversation, other children at the church began to steer clear of Israel. They're like, that guy's kind of an oddball.
Yeah.
One of the peers would even later say that Israel's presence, quote, made my skin crawl, end quote.
At 10?
Yeah. Well, around this time.
Yeah, so like adolescent 12. Age.
Israel would continue to break into houses around this time and would openly shoot BB guns at his neighbor's house, often setting fires as well around the area. You know, McDonald triad.
Yeah, fucking with animals.
Does he pee in the bed?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, he probably doesn't have a toilet, so
he pee in the tent? Does.
Pees in the tent. Yeah.
Israel was also known to occasionally break into the house of an acquaintance of his. The peer who lived in the home was known to have avoided Israel due to the fact that he witnessed him shoot an animal for fun once. On one specific occasion, Israel would steal multiple guns from a neighbor of his, and when his parents found out, they made him apologize.
You better apologize. You better
apologize for stealing weapons. By the time he was 14 years old, Israel stood at a tall 6'2", and he was also selling stolen guns to local adults around this time.
Does he have, like, a glandular issue? What's happening?
I don't know. I think he's just a tall guy.
Yeah. Well, because that was, what was his name? Carl Panzerheim.
Oh, yeah, he was huge. Like, he had, like, a thyroid something going on.
Thyroid issue. At 14?
Or pituitary, so... not thyroid.
Pituitary, yeah.
That's what it is. We're all dumb over here. It's like pituitary and dumb.
Yeah, it's like one of those things, you know?
You know,
like,
the ankle.
The ankles just, you know, sprout.
It was also around this time, again, 14 years old, that Israel admitted to feeling something much different about him. He would state about this, quote, I've known since I was 14 that there were things that I thought were normal and okay that no one else seemed to think were normal and okay. So that's when I just started being a loner. People found out about some of the stunts I did. Like my parents and parents of other kids who would hang out with me. They would find out about some of the stuff I did. And that's when I just started doing stuff by myself exclusively, end quote. Not a good sign. Don't isolate.
Started isolating myself.
Yeah,
really
no big
hard.
Deal.
Yeah, it seems like so far, because I keep thinking, my mind goes back to that apology. He's not really being held accountable for anything he's doing. And the fact that he's like, well, people find it odd, but nobody's specifically telling me not to.
Correct, yeah. I think, like, his parents are, like, almost, like, out of sight, out of mind. Like, I don't give a fuck what you do, but these people are pissed off. Like, just apologize.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, they're not, like, telling him to apologize to hold him accountable. They're telling him because they want to make the neighbors happy.
Yeah, they're telling him because they don't want to be held accountable.
Right. Around this time, in the early 90s, Jeff and Heidi would utilize their space to provide housing to friends they made at the church. Even though there's no room at the house for their kids to sleep in, they're having other people live in the house.
Yeah.
These friends would also have a son and daughter that came to the home. And in front of these two children, as well as his sister, Israel was known as tying the family cat to a tree and shooting it.
Oh my god.
Following this, the cat was able to get itself loose and attempted to run away, but it was obviously wounded and it started vomiting because it was, like, in shock.
Oh my god.
It was really, it's like such a graphic
that is
picture
awful.
To think about.
See, and this is why we don't do the content warning at the beginning, because, like, she really wanted to be like, she looked at me with these doe eyes like, I'm so sorry you're about to hear this.
Israel was known as laughing at the cat, and the boy who was visiting would vomit in response to what he was seeing.
Oh my god, that is awful.
Ugh, I know.
God, death to this man.
After this, the boy would run away and later told his father what had happened. And nothing came of it.
Of course.
I guess they just stopped coming around. They're like, oh, we just won't hang out with that family.
Just don't hang out with that Israel kid.
Israel's mother would begin to notice, quote, some troubling signs, end quote, around this time in Israel's life, and stated that she found it odd that Israel would be listening to different, quote, radio stations and different things, end quote.
Were like, they
he's
only
just
allowed
listening
to
some weird music. That must be the problem.
Yeah, it's like, it's just mainstream pop.
Yeah. Although he was interested in some strange activities, by his teenage years, Israel had actually become a very skilled carpenter. He would build his first wooden cabin for his family at the age of 16.
Wow.
In 1995, Israel would begin working for a contractor, a job that he would keep for 2 years. Israel would also keep a journal around this time that was littered with Bible verses, but also included daily sins in which he was thinking about his girlfriend. I guess he had a casual girlfriend. It wasn't really much mentioned it was about.
Very casual, apparently.
He's like, and I'm thinking about my girlfriend. I'm a sinner.
I'm thinking about her bra.
Yeah. Her ankle. It is thought that Israel had abducted and sexually assaulted a young girl around this time as well.
Okay, I take back what I said, because that's okay.
That's bad.
That's wild that he would feel like he needs to journal those thoughts.
Yeah, well, that wasn't in the journal, but, like, it's around the same time that he was journaling, yeah.
No, yeah, that's what I mean, though, but still, that he would, is it some kind of a subconscious cover-up?
Yeah.
Like, he's really perpetrating these really big evils, but he feels like as long as he writes down some of the not-so-bad ones, then maybe it makes him feel a little better.
That's actually a good point. I didn't think about that. As far as this abduction and alleged sexual assault of this young girl, that's all I heard about it. Just that it is thought. There was, like, no other information.
Oh, I see. Like, maybe it was, like, not a rumor, but
I think it was got like around town and there was no... He may have mentioned it in passing, like, later on. Yeah.
Okay.
Soon after this, the family would relocate once again to Smyrna, Maine, where they changed tunes to collect sap from maple syrup production in an Amish community.
I would love to do that.
Collecting sap would be pretty cool.
I think it'd be fun, like, to go out with your own little, like, what do you call it? Like a spigot? A
spigot, yeah, I think.
And then go out there and, like, because here we have strawberry picking sometimes.
Yeah, that's our thing.
And, yeah.
Well, not our thing, but
that's like our thing. Or, like, mushroom picking that we've heard so many things about in other episodes. But I would love to go maple syrup collecting.
Sap-sucking.
Sap-sucking.
Ew.
I just want to go sap-sucking.
So yes, they're now collecting sap in Maine. While Jeff and Heidi were extremely devoted to their faith, the children did not share the same ideations, and soon enough they would sneak around and lie just to get together with their friends or to watch a movie or hang out. Jeff and Heidi would not allow the children to learn any new skills, specifically playing an instrument, as they were, quote, against God, end quote. They just wanted them under their wing, right under their thumb all the time.
I wonder what that's about, though, because I have heard that it is, like, music in general, if it's not, like, secular music, is part of the devil.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know anything about that.
Yeah.
Around this time, Israel would fully decide that he did not want to follow the same religion as his parents. Israel was known to make tireless efforts to please his parents when it came to their religious views, but one day, after an intense argument, he would announce to them that he was an atheist.
Ooh! Oh, like the big no.
Yeah. Ugh. In response, Jeff and Heidi would immediately kick Israel out of the home and tell his younger siblings, who still all looked up to him, that they were not allowed to maintain contact with him.
That's sad.
That's really sad.
Totally exiled.
Following this, Israel would begin diving fully into Satanism and quickly began making plans to commit a ritualistic murder. He's like, well, I'm going to go all the way.
I'm wearing my Satan shirt today.
Oh my God. Fitting.
Fitting for this episode.
Sometime in the summer of 1997 or 1998, Israel would find himself in Maupin, Oregon, along the Deschutes River. Israel would come across a group of friends that were tubing down the river and specifically took notice of a young girl that he estimated to be about 14 to 18 years old. Mm. Israel would stalk the girl behind a tree line and was somehow able to get her away from her friends discreetly before sexually assaulting her at knife point. Israel stated that this assault was particularly violent and he had planned to murder her in a satanic ritual following the assault.
Jesus.
Israel stated, however, that he ultimately let the girl back to her friends, stating, quote, I was too timid. I wasn't violent enough. I made up my mind I was never going to let that happen again, end quote.
He was like, I wish I had, more brutally assaulted her.
I wish I would have killed her.
Killed her.
Mm-hmm. He's like, I was dumb. I let her go. On July 9th, 1998, Israel would change his tune a bit and enlist himself in the United States Army in the state of New York.
Typical.
He would subsequently serve as a specialist in Alpha Company, 1st Battalion, 5th Infantry Regiment. It was noted as being odd that he was able to join the military, considering Israel, like his siblings, had no birth certificate or a social security number. Mm. So they were kind of saying, like, how did he get around that? Like, did he make a false one, or did they just not care or something? Like, something had to have happened.
I wonder if they thought he was not who he was. Like, he was not willing to provide a birth certificate, so he must be, like, a fraud, or he's using an alias.
Either way, they allowed him to join the military, and following his intake, Israel would pass a month-long preliminary course that was for U.S. Army Rangers in training. He would be stationed at Fort Lewis and Fort Hood during his time in the Army, and also spent some time abroad as well. Israel would find himself stationed in Sinai, Egypt at one point, and he would become friends with several of his fellow soldiers. Israel would later admit that, while he was friends with them, he did tell one of the men that he would, quote, like to kill him, end quote.
Just by the way, brother. I'd brother like in arms.
Yeah.
I'd like to kill you.
With this gun.
With this gun. This gun. He's pointing to it.
Former comrades of Israel's would later state that while he was in Fort Lewis, he was noted as having a quiet demeanor and pretty much kept to himself. However, on weekends, he was known as the party guy who would drink entire bottles of Wild Turkey bourbon.
Oh my god.
I know.
Liver like poisoning.
What a monster. Furthermore, Israel's former soldier friends would take notice of his seemingly big interest in the band Insane Clown Posse, and noted that he had several posters around where he slept in the barracks.
Oh my god, he's a juggalo!
So random.
He's a juggalo! Was that little hatchet man.
A few years into his service...
Sorry. Fucking magnets, how do they work? No?
Not at all.
Oh my gosh, you have to watch that.
What is it?
It's Insane Clown Posse, but it's this music... It's a song called Miracles, and he's like, earth, sun, sky, grass, like, all this shit is, like, fucking miraculous, you know, and he says, fucking magnets, how do they work?
Oh my god.
It's like, bro, with, like, polar magnetation, like, it's just so stupid.
Look it up.
Just Google it. It's almost like... the insinuation that magnets only exist because God made them.
I still don't understand. It's too much for my little brain.
It's awful.
A few years into his service, in February of 2001, Israel would be arrested for a DUI in Thurston County after being pulled over. He would take a plea agreement following this charge, and he would ultimately be let go with just a $350 fine. About $620 today. Despite this, Israel would receive an Army Achievement Medal for his service as a gunner and assistant gunner in 2001. Israel would be honorably discharged the same year, and he would relocate to Nia Bay, Washington, following his leaving the military. Here, he would find the Maka Reservation community of Nia Bay, and he would also meet and begin dating a girl whom he met here. The two would quickly have a daughter together, and this girl will be born in July of 2001. Her name is not out there.
Not even the partner?
No.
Oh, wow. One. Okay.
And I was either way, I didn't want to put them out here.
Yeah, yeah. I was just going to ask if you knew how old she was.
Oh, I think she was around his age. Like, she wasn't much younger than him.
Okay.
Israel and the mother of his child would continue to live on the reservation for the next 6 years, but he would ultimately leave her when he began dating somebody new. Again, not much known about this woman either, but she was a nurse practitioner, and Israel would bring his daughter along with both of them when he left. So he took the daughter and moved in with this other lady.
Ain't nobody taking my child. I'm
sorry. Yeah.
Nope.
In 2007, Israel would start a construction business in Alaska, aptly named Keys Construction, and he would work here as a handyman, contractor, and construction worker. Israel would later speak with authorities about when his true killings began, and he was questioned on whether or not they started after his move to Alaska. Israel would respond to this by saying, quote, yeah, Nia Bay is a boring town, end quote. So he's like, I had to get out of there because I wanted to kill someone, and I couldn't do it there.
Oh my god. So he moved to Alaska.
Yeah.
Is he going to victimize, like, a bunch of Native women?
Just keep listening. Though it had been years since the incident at the river in which Israel lured and raped a young girl, the crime seemed to establish somewhat of a rule for Israel, in which he decided that when he began killing, he was only to do it away from his home. And he was going to make sure he killed them every time.
Yeah.
Israel would describe this rule, stating that he regularly traveled very far from his home and, quote, liked to find his victims along hiking trails, at campgrounds, and in other remote areas, end quote.
It reminds him of the woods when he was growing up.
Furthermore, Israel would choose his victims at random in order to avoid linking them to each other or to him.
That's so scary.
That's creepy as fuck. I don't like that at all. In addition to Israel planning ahead about who to abduct, or rather, not planning, he also described the way he was able to come up with the plan to becoming, quote, the most meticulous serial killer, end quote. Israel would explain that he would bury things he referred to as murder kits in the area where he planned to later attack somebody.
Oh my god, this is too much.
These kits would contain things like weapons and supplies in order to dispose of the body. And he would bury them, like, years prior. Like, years. He would remember where he buried them and then be like, oh, guess it's time to attack. I haven't been there in years.
Like, that is so creepy. Extra.
Israel would also later admit to attempting to rape two women on two separate occasions while in the military. In the first attempt, Israel stated that he was on leave in Egypt when he came across a sex worker and tried to assault her. The second attack, Israel stated, was attempted on a college student that he had met in Israel. Israel was in Israel. Haha. No. I was, like, waiting for that line this whole time. On top of these first two attempted attacks, Israel admitted to committing numerous bank robberies around this time, both in New York and in Texas. So again, no one knows this is happening while it's happening.
Right.
But timeline-wise, we're finding all this out later.
Okay.
On June 8th, 2011, Israel would commit his first known murders, in which he broke into the home of 49-year-old William or Bill Scott Currier and 55-year-old Lorraine Simon Currier of Essex, Vermont. We know that Israel stated that he purposefully chose his victims at random in order to avoid being caught, so there's no well-known motive for why he came across this particular home.
Hmm.
Israel would break into the home and tie up Bill and Lorraine before driving them to an abandoned farmhouse. Israel would then fatally shoot Bill before sexually assaulting and strangling Lorraine shortly after. Israel would later confess to hiding one of his murder kits near the home of the couple 2 years prior.
What?
To this night. Again, he probably just hid it near a neighborhood.
Yeah.
But it was 2 years prior that he's like, oh, I remember where I hid that. Let's go kill random people. Let's go
pick this random house. That's wild. I know. Like, who's to even say they didn't even just move into the house within those 2 years? Ugh.
Following the murder, Israel would hide his kit yet again in a new place in Parrishville, New York, where they remained for over a year, the items.
So he would, he'd bury it, and then he waited 2 years to use the specific kit, and then took it with him to bury it somewhere else after he murdered them?
After he used it to murder them, yeah, and he would hide it elsewhere. God.
Bright Cellars is a monthly wine club that matches you to delicious wines tailored completely to your tastes. Take their personalized 7-question quiz and be paired with wines you are sure to love. You can even improve your matches by rating each wine after you try them. Bright Cellars offers a unique tasting experience as each bottle comes with tasting notes and pairing suggestions. It's like having your very own sommelier at home. And their expert wine concierge will customize your subscription to fit any lifestyle. Click the link in the show notes for an exclusive offer from Bright Cellars today.
On February 1st, 2012, Israel would strike once again when he came across 18-year-old Samantha Tesla Koenig, a coffee booth employee in Anchorage, Alaska. Israel would approach the window of the drive-thru coffee shop and point a gun in the face of Samantha just before 8 p.m. According to Israel, he explained to Samantha that he was going to rob her and order her to turn off the lights in the shop. Samantha would comply, and Israel would respond by tying up her hands and jumping into the shop through the window. Creepy. Israel then forced Samantha out of the coffee shop and into his truck, where he then drove her to his house. He would further explain to Samantha that not only was he planning on robbing her, but also wanted to hold her for ransom in order to gain money from her parents. Israel and Samantha arrived at his home, and Israel would quickly take her debit card and cell phone. He would keep his victim alive for a little bit this time, and Israel would hold Samantha captive in his truck until around 2 a.m. when he finally took her to a shed in the back of his home.
So it's not money motivated. He was just telling her that it's money motivated.
Yeah. After entering the shed, Israel would tie a rope around Samantha's neck, and he would then exit the shed to go inside. What was he doing inside, you ask? Oh, he was just checking to make sure his girlfriend and daughter were still asleep and that he hadn't disrupted them. They were just asleep inside.
What?
Yeah.
I thought he wasn't going to kill at his house anymore.
No, yeah. We'll see.
But maybe that's why, like, he's getting ballsy. He's like, oh, I'm just going to do it anyways and see if anybody notices. Mm-hmm. See what I can get away with.
Yeah, exactly. He got away with killing a couple, so now he's like, I'm invincible, right?
Yeah.
After determining that the household was quiet, Israel would pour himself a glass of wine and return to the shed. Upon entering, Israel would explain to Samantha that he was going to rape her before strangling her to death with the rope that was tied around her neck. Unfortunately, Israel was serious about his comments, and he would ultimately strangle Samantha to death. Following Samantha being deceased, Israel would catch a cab to the airport and proceed to go on a 2-week cruise departing from New Orleans in the Gulf of Mexico with his parents.
What?
To anyone who's not familiar, the Gulf of Mexico is on the literal opposite side of the country from Alaska.
Yeah.
Like, that's a far trip.
Diagonally.
So, he's gone for 2 whole weeks, and her body's in the shed. And I'm pretty sure his girlfriend and daughter went with them as well. So, oh, okay. The house was vacant.
I was going to say, didn't stay behind.
Yeah.
But still, like, I guess he reconnected with his parents at some point?
Well, I said parents at first. I read somewhere that it was with his parents. I read elsewhere it was with his daughter and girlfriend. It might have been all of them. I'm not sure. But I'm just making sure that I give all the info that I found.
It might have been his parents.
Samantha Koenig would not be reported missing until the following day, as it was late at night when she was abducted. Unfortunately, she was reported missing hours after she had already been dead. The FBI would quickly take notice of the case and began to create a task force in hopes of locating Samantha. Although security footage showed Samantha at work the previous night and a strange man entering through the window, holding her at gunpoint, Israel had disguised himself very well for the cameras, and this lead quickly died.
I was going to ask if there was any security footage, because I'm assuming at this point it's, what, 90-something?
This is 2012.
Oh, 2012.
Yeah.
Oh, he was born in 78? Well, okay, yeah.
Yeah. He literally, like, put a disguise on, so even if he was caught on camera, it didn't look anything like him. Israel would return from his 2-week cruise on February 17th, 2012, where he would return to the shed to find Samantha's body. Sticking to his original plan, Israel decided that he was actually going to try and get ransom money from Samantha's parents. In order to provide, quote, proof of life, end quote, Israel would sew Samantha's eyelids open with fishing line.
Oh my god!
Put braids in her hair and makeup on her face. Remember, she's been deceased for over 2 weeks. Furthermore, he propped Samantha's body against a wall and held out a current issue of the Alaska Daily News in order to prove that she was alive and well.
I am shook. He sewed her eyelids open?
Yeah. A few days later, on February 24th, Israel would send these photos, along with a text stating where a ransom note could be located, to Samantha's boyfriend.
To her boyfriend? Not even to police or a news station?
To her boyfriend. On her phone. So, like, he texted from her phone and sent it to the boyfriend.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine, like, finding out later that she's, like, not alive in that photo? Like, I literally can't even imagine that.
You couldn't unsee it. I mean, you wouldn't be able to unsee it regardless if you thought that she was alive, because you think that she's in this kidnapping situation.
Mm-hmm. It's horrible. Israel would request a $30,000 payout in order to return Samantha alive. Hearing the news, Samantha's parents desperately wanted to comply, but they could only come up with about $5,000. Hoping it would give them some sort of advantage, Samantha's parents would deposit this money into her account for her captor to utilize. Unfortunately for the Koenigs, their daughter was already deceased, and Israel would dump the dismembered remains in a frozen lake just outside Palmer, Alaska. Israel would then flee, taking Samantha's ATM card on the road with him, and using it at various ATMs along the way.
Dumbass.
Once in Alaska, Arizona, New Mexico, to withdraw money.
What a dummy.
Of course, the card was now being traced, but when security footage from the ATMs were taken, the man withdrawing the money was noted as being in numerous layers and a full face mask and glasses. Again, disguised. However, the vehicle that the mystery man was driving was not out of view of the cameras, and it was not long until Israel Keyes was arrested in connection with the abduction and possible murder of Samantha Koenig. Investigators would quickly circulate footage of the vehicle through an APB, and when Israel's matching car was seen going slightly over the speed limit, he was pulled over. On March 13th, 2012, Israel would be taken into custody in Lufkin, Texas, by Texas Highway Patrol Corporal Brian Henry and Texas Ranger Stephen Rayburn. Following pulling him over, officers would search Israel's vehicle and discover Samantha's ATM card, her cell phone, and the same disguise that the man making the withdrawals was wearing.
He's so smart. He's just a genius.
Although Israel had been apprehended in March, Samantha Koenig's body would not be discovered until April 2nd, just a few days after Israel agreed to speak with authorities about his crimes.
Did he help, like, he located her?
I don't know specifically, but it seems as such, because it was just a few days later. He's like, yeah I dumped her in that lake. Mm-hmm. Following his arrest, Israel would be extradited to Alaska to be charged for his crimes, and he would quickly begin telling the story of his life. Israel would confess to the murder of Samantha Koenig and give details about the courier killings. Israel would also state that he killed, quote, less than a dozen, end quote, people in total. While he was particularly vague, Israel would comment on certain crimes that led investigators to believe that he was responsible for at least 11 murders in total. Throughout the series of interviews he gave the FBI, Israel showed emotion when speaking about his daughter, whom he did not want to know anything about his crimes. Israel stated about this, quote, I want my kid to have a chance to grow up. You know, she's in a safe place now. She's not going to see any of this. I want her to have a chance to grow up and not have all this hanging over her head, end quote.
I mean, how selfless? But you also took the lives of other people.
Right, and if you didn't want her to know about it, why'd you do it?
Yeah.
Like, what do you think was going to fucking happen?
What about Samantha's parents?
Yeah, exactly.
They literally forked over money in the hopes that their daughter was alive.
Yeah.
And you still manipulated that situation.
That's disgusting. Furthering his seriousness about not wanting to be in the media, Israel stated, quote, I'm happy to help, but it's on my terms. I'm not in this for the glory. I'm not trying to be on TV. End
oh,
quote.
Please. Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt your end quote. But like, jeez.
Yeah. Like, then why the fuck did you do it?
You're a martyr. Okay. Yeah. Like, no.
I'm not in it for the glory.
I'm not in it for the glory. I'm in it for self-gratification.
Yeah, seriously. Like, what? Like, that makes it better. Among other things, Israel would explain that he made a crucial mistake when committing his last crime. He broke his rule that he would not commit any crimes close to home, and he blamed this for the reason he got caught. Like,
yeah, that's the reason. Not because you're a dummy. You thought about dressing up in front of the camera, but you didn't think to not drive past the camera.
Yeah. Israel would state about his early crimes, quote, back when I was smart, I would let them come to me, end quote. Yeah, because you were so approachable, right?
Sounds like an incel.
I'm pretty sure that, like, everyone was avoiding you, like, since you were fucking weird. On May 23rd, 2012, just a few months after his arrest, Israel attended a routine hearing regarding his charges. While here, Israel would use wood shavings that he had gotten from a pencil in an attempt to pick his handcuffs. I also read somewhere he was able to get his leg irons, like, broken, mm-hmm. like he broke them, and was able to get, like, a little ways away before being tasered and subdued by officers.
Ticky, ticky, ticky,
yeah.
Put your hands up!
The following day, on May 24th, 2012, Israel would be interviewed once again. In the beginning of the interview, Israel begins by making a joke that he was sore in muscles that he didn't even know he had due to being tased the day before.
Oh, I thought he was going to be like, because I've been working out. No. You know, my 1 hour a day, I get to work out. Mm.
He stated, quote, it reminded me of those late night infomercials they use to sell those machines that shock your abs and stuff, end quote.
He's going to get so ripped because he's going to get tased so many times.
So many times. He continues throughout the interview making jokes, especially when Officer Jeff Bell states that there was some concern based on Israel's escape attempt the previous day. Israel responds by laughing and stating, quote, what are they afraid I'd actually get away? End quote. Like, he's, like, making jokes about it. He's like, no, they're actually thinking about, like, trying you for, like, more shit now because you're a dumbass.
Yeah.
Many other interviews are available online, and I'll have the source down in the show notes. But unfortunately, since there was an ongoing trial, there's no further information about Samantha in these interviews because they weren't allowed to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to do some audio clips, but there was, like, a loud buzzing in the background, and it was too distracting.
Oh,
but yeah, I did pull some other things from it. Israel's trial would be scheduled for March of 2013, a little over a year after the death of Samantha. During this time, Israel would continue his interviews, but his cooperation would decrease as time went on and his name was getting bigger and bigger in the media.
Mm.
He's like, I told you not to fucking tell anybody about me. Like they have control over
that. He's someone who doesn't understand the power of the word, like, no. Like, the fact that he's like, oh, I'm just escaping just to see if I can. Like,
yeah.
Nothing holds me down. And then, you know, with that, when the media is picking up his name, he doesn't have control over it.
Yeah. But also, you don't want your name in the media. Why the fuck are you trying to escape in a courtroom that probably has a bunch of fucking people and reporters? You know what I mean? Like, it's
stupid. And he's willing to do a few interviews because he wants to remain relevant, but he doesn't want to do all the interviews because I'm sure it's monetary, too.
Like, and he wants to, like, lead them little pieces, like breadcrumbs and stuff.
Yes,
instead of just giving them all the details.
Yes, exactly.
Israel would grow frustrated in the delays of his hearing. Not necessarily delays, but the fact that it was a year later, because he just wanted to be tried.
Right.
And although it was scheduled, like I said, a little over a year out, prosecutors were suggesting that it may be delayed more as they were debating on seeking the death penalty.
Mm.
In one interview, Israel stated that he wished to be executed within a year of his hearing. He's like, just fucking kill me. I don't want to be here.
Who else said that? Someone else is like, yeah, no, if you're... I'm not guilty, but if you find me guilty, you better kill me.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Was it Dan Wozniak?
It was definitely a man.
I think it was Dan Wozniak.
I'm not sure.
The thespian. The actor.
It's so stupid. Like, oh, okay, I don't want to be held responsible for my crimes. Just kill me.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, if I'm not guilty, but if I was, you better kill me.
You better kill me. Israel would state in interviews that he was never planning on being taken into custody alive. He stated that when he would commit a crime such as a bank robbery, he always brought two guns. One to rob the bank, and a second one with 100 rounds for a shootout. Never happened.
How many times did he rob a bank? Because I'm pretty sure he was just light smuggling shit out of people's homes.
It's actually coming up later. I put it, like, kind of towards the end. He did, and they end up finding out later that he robbed, like, a bunch of banks.
Oh, so shit.
Not, like, a bunch of
like,
banks.
I was like, man, this guy's ego is through the
more
roof.
More than one, yeah.
Actually, we've been looking for him for 20 years.
On November 29th, 2012, Officer Bell, Special Agent Jolene Golden, Assistant U.S. Attorney Frank Russo, and Assistant U.S. Attorney Kevin Fieldis all interviewed Israel once again in an attempt to gain more information about unsolved crimes.
I feel like Frank Russo is...
He sounds familiar, right?
Very prevalent, yeah.
Yeah. I think he's been on a lot of big cases. Israel all but refused to cooperate, and he would continue to ask mostly about the logistics of the hearing and charges moving forward. He's like, I don't care about that. Like, I just want to, like, talk about the hearing and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the interviews, the FBI were able to confirm that Israel was responsible for a robbery of a community bank in Tupper Lake, New York, in April of 2009. He also told authorities that he burglarized a home in Texas and set it on fire.
He's just like a jack of all trades.
He's all over the place. The FBI also reported that Israel burglarized 20 to 30 homes across the U.S. and robbed several banks between 2001 and 2012. Again, these are throughout the interviews. He's, like, barely giving them anything, and they're piecing it all together.
Yeah.
With the trial a few months away, everybody was hitting the ground running in order to prepare, especially the prosecution, as, again, they were considering the death penalty. On December 1st, 2012, Israel Keyes would be found dead in his prison cell with a self-inflicted wound made by a razor blade.
What?
It's unclear to this day how he was able to smuggle a razor blade into his cell, but it is thought that he was not willing to spend his life in prison and would rather die than risk not getting the death penalty. He was, like, afraid he wasn't going to get the death penalty and just be in life in prison.
That's fucking wild.
Yeah. Just bye, see ya. Along with...
Straight up Epstein'd himself.
Along with the deceased Israel, a message was written on the wall in his cell. 12 skulls were drawn out with Israel's own blood, along with the words, quote, we are one, end quote.
Ew! Ew, Heebs!
Investigators believe that these 12 skulls represent Israel and his 11 murder victims.
Not 12 victims, though?
No, I think it's like, there was like one that was separated from
I
the
see.
11.
Okay.
Yeah. Israel's mother, 4 sisters, and 3 brothers-in-law were the only people in attendance at his funeral. Peace. While it is confirmed that Israel had 3 murder victims, with all the information that he provided, investigators were able to come up with a list of possible victims, including some that were not part of the 11 suggested.
Mm.
So these are additional potential victims.
Yeah.
On March 2nd, 1996, 13-year-old Julie Marie Harris disappeared while waiting for a ride to her local church in Colville, Washington. Julie was known as having a blood disorder that caused both of her legs to be amputated at the knee when she was younger.
Aww.
Julie would get two prosthetic legs and go on to become a medalist in skiing at the Special Olympics.
Oh, shit.
On April 26th, 1997, Julie's remains would be located in a wooded area a few miles away from where she went missing. Her prosthetic legs would be found in a river close to the crime scene a month later. At the time of Julie's disappearance, Israel was 18 years old and living in the same area where she went missing from. Israel was questioned about the murder of Julie when he was incarcerated, but never confirmed or denied if he was the perpetrator. Another young girl from the Colville, Washington area, 12-year-old Cassandra, or Cassie Emerson, was reported missing in June of 97. Cassie was noticed as missing when the remains of 29-year-old Marlene K. Emerson, her mother, were located in their burned-down trailer home.
Oh my god.
A year following her disappearance, Cassie's remains would be located 13 miles from her home. Israel, still living in the area around this time, confessed to law enforcement that one of his first arson crimes was burning down a trailer home in Colville.
What? But he didn't specifically confess to that.
Yeah, and he didn't say these people's names or anything like that. He didn't even say there was, like, bodies involved. Mm-hmm. Israel had hinted to investigators that he had killed 5 people in Washington State and was the subject of an active investigation of the state police and the FBI regarding these crimes. But again, he's being so vague, and he's doing it on purpose.
Yeah.
He's just giving them, again, breadcrumbs.
Well, do you think, not that it makes him more relevant or less relevant, but do you think more so that it's certain crimes that he's not necessarily proud of, and that's why he's not claiming them? Like, with the arson, maybe he didn't mean to burn down the trailer with someone in it, so he's not going to claim it as his.
Yeah.
Or maybe he's afraid to look like someone who takes advantage of maybe a disabled person, and that's why he didn't claim that one either.
That's an interesting thought. I personally think that he has a lot of antisocial personality disorder. I'll just say that. But he has a lot of antisocial tendencies, which means, like, complete lack of empathy, and I think he gets a rise out of fucking with people.
Yeah.
And he's fucking with the authorities and the investigators by giving them just what he wants to give them. And he likes watching them scramble and ask more questions, because he has the control.
Yeah.
I think he thinks it's funny, like, to gaslight them or to, like, lead them on a wild goose chase.
I like your term, like, breadcrumbing, because, like, that's such a term now in relationships where it's, like, just giving you a little bit to keep you hooked.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that you're right. I think that's definitely what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. Israel claimed to have either buried or submerged a victim in a lake in Nia Bay, Washington, sometime between July and October 2001. A body was found in this same location, but it was ultimately determined to have been accidental. But this was determined to be accidental before Israel suggested that he might have had something to do with it. Mm. So it was, like, ruled accidental when it was found, and then way later on he's like, oh yeah, I did that, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Israel would further confess to the double homicide of a young couple, which occurred sometime between 2001 and 2005, and according to him, the female was fatally strangled while the male was beaten to death. Again, vague. Furthermore, Israel claimed that he had killed 2 further victims between 2005 and 2006, who were both killed separately. As far as additional possible murders go, Israel is a suspect in a series of crimes committed by one dubbed the Boca Killer. These crimes took place in 2007 in Boca Raton, Florida, with the first victim being that of 52-year-old Randy Ann Maltese Groenberg. On March 23, 2007, Randy was abducted from the Boca Town Center Mall parking lot, and her body would be found within an hour at a different location with 2 fatal gunshot wounds. On August 7, 2007, an unidentified woman and her toddler son were kidnapped from the same parking lot. Although the kidnapper wore a face covering and an overall disguise, the victim did catch a glimpse of their face, and the kidnapper was known to have resembled Israel. The kidnapper forced the woman to withdraw money from her ATM card, but ultimately let her and her son go unharmed, which is odd.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, in the Boca Killer crimes, on December 12, 2007, 47-year-old Nancy Bochichicho and 7-year-old Joey Bochichicho Hauser were found fatally shot in their vehicle in the same Boca Town Center Mall parking lot. So, again, just listing potential things that he could have done.
Right.
Furthermore, authorities believe that Israel may have murdered 48-year-old sex worker Deborah Feldman following her disappearance on April 8th, 2009. Deborah was last seen at her apartment in Hackensack, New Jersey, and her body has never been recovered. Authorities questioned Israel about this disappearance, however, after searching his browsing history and seeing multiple inquiries about Deborah's missing persons case.
Oh.
He was, like, Googling it, like, Deborah, yeah. Blah, blah. When asked about this, Israel said, quote, "I don't want to talk about her yet," end quote. So again, he's, like, taunting them, like, "Oh, I don't want to talk about her yet." Like,
yeah.
Hinting that he has information about it, but he has the control. Like, I'm just going to keep that under wraps for now.
Right, yeah. Let me know what you know, then I'll tell you.
Yeah. So it is believed that Israel killed Deborah and buried her body near Tupper Lake, New York. Lastly, Israel is a suspect in the murder of 58-year-old James or Jimmy Lamar Tidwell Jr. Jimmy was an electrician who disappeared in Mount Enterprise, Texas on February 15th, 2012. Now, I know what you're thinking. February 15th? That's weird. Wasn't he on the cruise during that time? Because he didn't come back home until February 17th.
Yeah.
But, two-week cruise, he was docking in Louisiana, and Mount Enterprise, Texas is on the east side of Texas, so he literally could have driven across the state border and then back within a few hours.
Yeah, for sure.
So I was like, this doesn't make any sense, and then I reread, I was like, oh shit.
Did he drive home, or did he fly?
I'm not sure, but I think
maybe... if he drove home, then he could just swing through there.
That's true, but if he got back on the 15th, like we said, or the 14th, like we said, it wouldn't take him 2 days to drive all the way to Alaska, it would take him longer. Maybe.
Yeah, it depends.
I don't know. I think he flew home, but I think he would have just maybe gone to Texas and then back to Louisiana and then flown home.
That's
from
true.
There.
Yeah.
Either way, Jimmy had just finished a night shift and was last seen around 5:30 a.m. During a bank robbery that took place the following day, February 16th, 2012, the perpetrator, believed to be Israel, was wearing a hat that resembled the one that Jimmy was last seen in.
Ooh.
The hair of the perpetrator also looked very similar to Jimmy's. And when questioned about this crime later, Israel stated that the wig he wore was, in fact, human hair. When asked where he bought the real human hair to use as a wig, Israel stated, quote, "You don't have to buy real hair to get real hair," end quote.
Oh my god. Full-bodied heave.
That is so not funny. That's fucking gross. I just couldn't say it, like, seriously, because that's such a bizarre fucking quote.
It is. Yeah, you're laughing at the ridiculousness of it.
Like, what?
You just scalped this man?
It seems like it.
I mean, it's ruthless enough that it's hard to believe. So if it looked like real, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, he's just that far removed.
He's that heinous.
That he's like, oh, I could just put a human bodysuit on and go commit bank robberies and nobody's gonna know that it's me.
That's what I'm saying. He has no sense of empathy or remorse or how he affects anybody else or, like, what he does, like, how grotesque it is.
Oh my god.
Furthering the idea that Israel was a crazy serial killer rather than a man who just killed on two separate occasions were the things that came up in the search of his house. So we're going back to one after he was arrested.
Mm-hmm.
Dozens of books about murders, both fiction and nonfiction, were found at Israel's home in the search. He was also known as closely studying specific serial killers like Ted Bundy, and he felt that he shared many similarities with Ted of the West.
Oh my god. Sweaty Teddy.
It is thought that Israel attempted to escape court to copy Ted's actions after his arrest, because he also tried to escape.
Mm-hmm.
However, Israel was very concerned about being seen as a copycat, which is another reason he didn't want to be in the media.
Okay.
I don't want them to think that I'm like them. I'm trying to copy anybody.
He's one of those guys that likes one of those like obscure band t-shirts that you wouldn't know is that band unless you know the band.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like he's like, I want to emulate Ted Bundy, but I don't want to be like Ted Bundy.
Mm-hmm. I don't want anyone to know that I'm trying to be like him. Additionally, Israel referred to Dennis Rader, aka BTK, as a, quote, wimp for apologizing in court and showing remorse for his crimes.
I mean, I agree with that.
But he expressed admiration for other serial killers, quote, that haven't been caught, end quote. He's like, oh, I like those guys. Like, those guys are cool. Israel was asked about fellow Alaskan serial killer Robert Hansen while being interviewed as well. And he would respond, quote, yeah, I know all about him. I probably know every single serial killer that's ever been written about. It's kind of a hobby of mine,
okay,
end quote. I mean, same.
Scarlett Jenkinson.
Same, but I don't kill people, you know?
Yeah, we do it for, you know...
For this.
For this,
for
yeah.
For this.
For this.
A few months after Israel was arrested, the 2012 Aurora, Colorado shooting perpetrated by James Holmes took place. Authorities would casually inform Israel about the shooting, to which he would respond by asking about the status of James and expressed interest in getting to know more about him.
I mean, I think we would all like to know more about James Holmes, yeah. Only because James Holmes has probably one of the most lengthy mental illness, I guess...
Records,
yeah. Yeah, whatever you want to call it. Like, that he is so far removed from reality. That
we've got to do a case on him.
I actually had friends that were... Well, they were living in Denver, and they almost went to the Aurora Theater that night.
That's horrible.
I can't even imagine. I called them next day.
Although Israel was extremely infatuated with other serial killers, he would not once refer to himself as a serial killer. In the very beginning, he said, here's how I was planning on becoming the most meticulous serial killer.
Mm.
But during interviews, he would not ever say, like, I'm a serial killer. Because he killed 3 people, but it was only in 2 separate crime scenes. Mm-hmm. So technically, he isn't a serial killer. Unless all of these other crimes that we think are true are true.
Yeah.
Then he is. But I think... In my mind, him saying, I'm a serial killer, would be essentially confessing to those 11 crimes that they think he might have done.
That's true. You know? Yeah.
Following Israel's death and years later, authorities would review unsolved murder and missing persons cases to try to determine which, if any, Israel could have been responsible for. In 2012, authorities identified another possible victim known only as Lewis County Jane Doe. Her body was found in the Peterman Hill area in Morton, Washington, on April 7th, 2011, by a passing motorist. In 2022, Lewis County Jane Doe was officially identified, but her name was not released to the public. This is in 2022, so 10 years later, but I'm going back to 2012. So additionally, in late 2012, a confession by Israel about a murder committed in New York State was determined as credible, although authorities had not determined any details of the crime. So I don't really know about that one. It's like...
Yeah, it's like, how is it credible, but...
That's just what I read. It was like, yeah, he... Just lastly, there's another murder. We've decided it's credible. I don't know if they just didn't reveal any details, or if they just didn't have many details. I'm not sure.
Or if certain things just lined up, but they didn't have any actual evidence.
It's like circumstantial.
Yeah.
So it was never truly determined why Israel did the things that he did, and his MO was never really established as well. Like I said earlier, he's seen as, like, an anomaly of sorts, because we usually see at least a pattern in the way that other serial killers kill, but
yeah.
He, like, made it his M.O. to not have an M.O.,
mm-hmm.
You know? U.S. Attorney Tristram Coffin was known as saying about this following Israel's death, quote, "He provided some motivation, but I don't think it's really possible to pigeonhole why he did this. He described to investigators that this was a volitional act of his. It was something that he could control, and he liked to do it. Why someone acts like that, nobody knows," end quote.
Yeah, he's not like other girls.
Yeah. I said volitional, I think it's volitional.
So
he's not like other girls, he's a cool killer.
He's not like, yeah. Yeah, he's the guy's girl.
Oh my god. Well, that's Israel Keyes. I have just a little bit about his mental health, but that's the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
It was a hard one to research because, again, he only has like 2 or 3 confirmed murders and then all of this other suspected shit.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the mental health status of Israel, I referred to a video created by one Dr. Todd Grande.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Grande states that Israel was evaluated while in custody and appeared to have many mental illness characteristics. These include antisocial personality disorder, substance use disorder, and a well above average IQ. According to Dr. Grande, Israel also showed characteristics of both primary and secondary psychopathy. Didn't realize there was a difference, which I thought was interesting. So primary psychopathy is characterized by callousness, manipulation, and superficial charm. While we all know that that's him.
And Bundy.
Yeah, but secondary psychopathy is associated with impulsivity, lack of long-term goals, and hostile behavior, which is also kind of him.
See, and I don't... Maybe the hostile behavior as far as Bundy goes, but I think Bundy had a lot of longevity in his life.
Yeah.
He had... plan to be a lawyer, like, all these things. So that's interesting that I don't think he would fall into that second category.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But Israel, again, an anomaly. He falls into both because he is callous. He is very manipulative. He has this superficial charm. But he also didn't think he was going to be alive for much longer if he kept committing crimes. He didn't plan on getting caught alive. he has hostile behavior, like he's withholding information, he's crossing his arms and saying fuck you.
Yeah.
You know, like impulsivity, like he said he didn't want to do, trying to escape, said he was never going to commit a crime close to home and then did because he saw an opportunity, you know. Ooh, I got goosebumps.
Opportunistic, for sure.
And then lastly, Israel had a lack of remorse and just didn't ever take full responsibility for his actions.
Mm-hmm.
I just, honestly, in my scientific mind, I just wish that he was still around so we could study his brain more because of how unique. He was of a person.
That's interesting.
But yeah, that's Israel Keyes.
Wild.
I know. I've been wanting to do that one for a while, so I finally sat down and did it.
If this is your regular weekly case, I'm excited to hear your Patreon.
Oh, it's gonna be worse.
this is pretty gruesome.
Pretty gnarly case. I mean, sewing someone's eyeballs open. Oh, I know.
Don't remind me. I already pushed that out of my head.
Well, that is it. Thank you guys for joining us for another episode. Get excited for Denver. I am so excited. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have so much cool merch. It's exclusive merch that we haven't even put online or anything.
Yeah.
So we're going to have a lot of that, and we're going to be wearing all of our merch, too. If there's anything that you guys see while you're there or before you go that you want to order, just go ahead and DM us or email us, and we can... If you see anything there that's not your size, I mean, let us know. But if you want something beforehand, go ahead and email us and let us know as well.
Yeah. That way you can rep.
Yes. Is there anything else?
I think that's it.
Okay, well, we will see you guys soon. Patreon members, be really excited for that new case coming out in the next couple days.
Yep.
All right. Love you. Bye. Looking for a new perfume or cologne to match your style? Scentbird has got you covered. With over 600 scents to fall in love with, Scentbird is a fragrance subscription box that will give you plenty of choices. Just choose what you would like from their best sellers, activate your subscription, and receive your first 120 spray bottle. Click the link in the show notes now to receive an exclusive offer with Scentbird.